and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us this afternoon. In studio with me is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and we'd love to have your questions for him during today's show. You can always phone those in to 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, you came in here braving the cold without your coat on. You just got a nice suit on as you sit in here. I got to thinking about the cold, and of course, there are a lot of infrastructure things that can happen with that. Have you guys had it so cold that you've had any water main breaks or anything like that you've had to deal with?
Well, we've had a few this year, but a lot less than normal. Without having the extreme cold temperatures over long periods of time, we've really had probably not even a third of the normal water main breaks that we would have had at this point in the year. We got some, actually, when it warmed back up because the frost line changes, so the ground shifts a little bit. And that's what actually caused those. When it warmed back up, we got a little bit more of them. But overall, I don't want to jinx myself here, but we've had a really good winter and saved a lot of money on repairs and overtime and things like that. And so we hope we get through this next month the same way, and we'll have it behind us for the year.
Let's get to some listener questions that have come in. One question says, is there currently a plan to clean up or redevelop the Five Points area? If yes, what is this plan? And the person also says, what can a Lafayette citizen do to help encourage, promote, and execute redevelopment of this area?
Well, certainly, you know, years ago when we looked at the hilltop to hilltop plan in Lafayette and West Lafayette, and we continue to work off that plan and new plans as we look at the urban core revitalization of downtown Lafayette. And certainly the Five Points area is a gateway down into the community and down into downtown. And we have just started having those initial discussions at looking at doing an initial plan for that area. As you know, we've been really concentrating on that urban core, the riverfront, the Centennial neighborhood, Romick, Ellsworth, and really in the heart of downtown as we've looked at streetscape and some of the new developments that you saw. And now that we have those underway, a lot of them are started, they've really taken hold, we feel good about where we're at. We really do want to look at how do we move up Upper Main Street, how do we look at that Five Points area, and how do we begin to improve that and really turn that into that gateway coming into downtown. There's a lot of potential up there with some nice buildings, and then there's a lot of structures that really would probably need to go. And so I would, I would tell your listener that, yes, over the next year or so, probably even less than that, over the next few months, you'd probably see us start that process to look at an initial plan, maybe not in great detail yet, but to get that just kind of overview. And certainly we would have public meetings and public input and would welcome people that are willing to participate and have an interest. I really feel strongly about that area. That's always great when you have people that have passion about an area or a project and they're willing to get involved. We'd love to have them. And I feel strongly in this calendar year of 2016, you'll see us start a plan for that area.
It's an interesting area because you've got a number of storefronts that are longtime businesses that have been there for a long time. But in a lot of cases, too, they're not the prettiest looking structures. They could use some freshening up. They could use facade repair. And then you also have some spots. And it's interesting because it's not necessarily contiguous where you've got business, business, business. In some cases, you've got business and then an open spot that can't seem to stay filled, and then a business on the other side of it. And so you've got a number of different, it seems, pressures pushing on you, depending on where you're looking in that intersection.
Yeah, you have some buildings up there that still have some historic character to them that are really nice. You have others that obviously were built in the 60s and 70s that don't have that same feel leading in, say, downtown into the St. Mary's neighborhood. Because you do have, you really go back all the way to Columbian Park, and you have the park area. Then you come into the Five Points area, and it goes back into that commercial feel. But it also goes into two surrounding neighborhoods and then comes down the hill where it would be in the St. Mary's and the Perrin neighborhood on one side of the street. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there, but there's also some challenges, like you indicated, that we need to do that in a way that blends that commercial feel with that neighborhood feel and then works in what we want to continue to do in downtown Lafayette. And it's really as we work up that Main Street and Columbia Street, South Street corridor. So that will take a lot of planning, but I think that we're ready. The good thing is we have so many good things going on in downtown Lafayette, and we have so much development happening. We have it moving in the right direction. That really affords us the ability and the opportunity now to expand that area that we really want to work on it. We'll have the resources and we'll have the kind of the energy, you know, to get that done and the catalyst to move in that direction.
While we're talking about rehabilitating things, we've got another question that came in here from Monica, who writes, I live next door to a house that's had no utilities and has been exposed to the elements for at least the past 6 months. She says, I've not seen the owner for the last 3 months and assume he's abandoned the house. It's dangerous and needs to be demolished. The police, city engineer, and city attorney are all aware of this, but there seems to be no movement on it. And she says, every time I call the city engineer for more information, they say they'll call back, but they never do. What other steps, she says, can I take to call attention to this problem and get some answers?
Well, we have several avenues, and we've, since 2005, we have tore down probably 40 or 50 structures and rehabilitated about 200, 250 structures through what we call the Lafayette Hearing Authority. And that's members of the Board of Works that create this board and that we look at problem properties like that. And so we're actually very aggressive, and we have worked hard and actually decreased the number of properties that we have called in, that people call in about now that we have to deal with. So I'd have to look into that one individually on the communication piece to see where it is. But, you know, if she's turned that in, I'll certainly go back and look at it, because we're working very hard on those types of properties. And you probably saw recently, as part of our initiatives with the police department, we are actually using a new law for abandoned houses. Now, there are still a process that we have to go through. There's still criteria that we have to meet. But really, through the Hearing Authority for Unsafe Structures and the new law with abandoned houses, you know, we're starting to close that loop, because some of those properties are in foreclosure. They're actually owned by a bank. They're paying the taxes on them. They're not willing just to let them be tore down yet till that process moves through. And they do have some legal rights. The city doesn't just not have the ultimate authority to say, just because we want to tear something down, we're going to tear it down. A long time, it may be tied up in court. It may be tied up in a family trust where somebody died and they're arguing about what should be done. But we'll certainly, if she could send me that address to my office, I'll certainly look at that for her and see where we're at in the process and make sure that she gets contacted. But we're actually very aggressive in dealing with unsafe structures and abandoned houses.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and we'd love to have your questions. Call them in to 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Another question from a listener. Josh writes, in a recent article on the rise in crime, a community gardening effort was mentioned for garnering more involvement in the community and beautifying vacant space that may otherwise be used for less desirable purposes. He says, can you talk about how community members can go about opening new community gardens in vacant spaces? He says, in particular, there seem to be opportunities for gardens in city-owned land in the former railroad corridor.
Well, yeah, certainly the city is helping to promote community gardens. We work with a lot of neighborhoods. In fact, I was just at a neighborhood meeting last night, the historic Jeff neighborhood, because down there, close to the railroad corridor where he's talking about, we started a hay bale garden last year. But in that neighborhood, there's also a church that's doing a community garden. We've actually donated city property to help get community gardens started. And we're very interested in helping neighborhoods do that. With the Chatham Square development out off Greenbush Street, there's a big community garden behind that we donated ground for. So we're very interested in helping groups that are interested in doing that, get them off the ground. We would prefer not to run and manage those long term. We want to find churches and different organizations that want to run those and manage those, and we'll help with the infrastructure. We put in water, run water lines, so there's water to those sites. We can help with other infrastructure, and we can help get them started. So, you know, that's something that we are interested in. We think it's a good use of properties that otherwise you may not be able to build on or do something that really contributes to the neighborhood, and that garden may really play an important piece. And so, again, if somebody's interested, if they want to contact me, I'll get them to the appropriate staff member. But we already work with a lot of community members on community gardens where the city plays a supporting role in making that happen.
I want to talk a little bit about the announcements that were made last week by Police Chief Pat Flannelly, and I'll kick it off by saying that we got a tweet from someone. We only know their handle, which is Boiler Grad, so perhaps they went to Purdue. And this person writes in, "I don't live there, but here crime is high. What is the mayor's plan to keep people living there?" Don't answer that just yet, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about the announcement last week. The police chief attributed what was a nearly 50% rise in aggravated assaults year over year to something that you had talked about, which is an increase in drug crime, and you've talked about that on this program a fair amount. And the police chief said that a lot of the people who are involved in these things know one another. He said in many cases, it's not just a random attack on somebody. And so you've got two sides of the same coin here. You've got the struggle to fight drug crime, which is going up here and a lot of other places in the state. But at the same time, the police chief said, look, you're not all that likely to be the victim of a random crime in Lafayette. And so it sounds like that's a message you're going to have to try to balance as you try to respond to people like our tweeter who keep hearing crime is high in Lafayette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you put that very well, Stan. Thank you. We know that looking through all our data and analyzing all the statistics and looking at those crime reports, that Lafayette is still a very, very safe community. That exactly like you said, that the chance of being involved in a violent, random crime in our community is still very small. Most of those violent crimes, people know each other. They're involved in either using drugs, dealing drugs, or hanging around with people that are involved in those activities. And so that is the message that we need to get out, because we do want people to feel safe. We don't want them to have a perception that they're not safe. That's not good for the community, and it's not reality. The reality is people are very safe. Even some of those violent crimes, if you were really able to dig into them and get to the root cause, you would see that most people just would not be involved in those circumstances. And so we need to keep preaching that. But on the same hand, we also want our citizens to be well-informed, because a well-informed community helps make good decisions that can help reduce crime and really help us tackle this drug abuse problem. Because there are certain things that government can do, and like you said, we've talked about some of those with the take-home car program that we're going to do that's going to get 42 vehicles into our neighborhoods, which we think from a visibility standpoint, building community relations is important, proximity for response time and stuff, all is a good idea and all is important. We're adding 5 new police officers that will be out there in various capacities that we need to deal with some of these issues. We're adding a new dispatcher. We're working on the abandoned houses. As you mentioned, we're working with faith-based groups, with the Faith Community Center to build the Hartford Hub, with First Assembly of God to build a new community center out in the south part of town. We have a new owner of Claystone that we're doing lots of work with. We've expanded our parking enforcement that's helping with ordinance violations that free up policemen to do more important things. But the bottom line to all that is we still have to keep talking about the issue, because we need our community to help with getting drug addiction services in here, get mental health services in here, working with the medical community. The United States prescribes more prescription pain medication than anybody in the world. A lot of people getting addicted to heroin start by getting addicted to prescription pain medication. We've got to get down the food chain, pre-K education, all-day kindergarten, things that lift people up, move people forward to stop that addiction and those problems before they start. So we have to talk about all of it and to keep talking about it. And then it can create a perception, because we're talking about it so much, that people get concerned. And we understand that. And that's what we're working to do to find that balance. You know, we even launched a new app earlier in the week. And part of that app is that you can report things with your phone right to the Action Center. It will geolocate where you're at. You can take a picture. So if there's things happening in your neighborhood that you want the police to know about quickly, it's another way to do it. And you can download that, whether you have an Apple phone or an Android, you can download that. That's another piece of that crime fighting tool. I mean, we're trying to do everything from what we put on social media, from Facebook to Twitter, and we put a lot of information out, to what the police department's doing with Nextdoor. We want to have an informed citizenry, because we believe that is a key to helping us in a comprehensive way solve this problem. But as you indicated, it also can help you know, it almost creates a perception then that things are worse than they are. And so we're working to find that balance, but we're going to err on the side of information. We're going to, and side of transparency.
Well, and that perception seems fairly clear, at least from the people who call or text or email us, because we've gotten a number of questions for you in the last 6 months that say, what are you doing about crime in one way or another? Let me engage you on a couple of those things you mentioned. We'll start with the police take-home cars. You've got now more than double the number that you had, went from 18 to 42. And so my question to you is, are those cars going home to police officers' homes that are in some of these high crime neighborhoods? In other words, the places where you would most want to see the police presence to bring down the high crime? Or is it the case that the police officers happen to live in places that are pretty safe and don't have that much crime?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple things to say. First of all, I want to make it clear, as we announced at the press conference, all 24 cars are in. They're being outfitted with cages and all. You saw some of the new equipment. They have not all been dispersed out yet, so I don't want to create that perception that they're all out yet, and it's going to take a while to do that. But I think the main thing to realize is that every neighborhood in the community is important. And when police officers drive home, they drive through different neighborhoods to get home. When they leave to run errands, to do different things, places they might go, they leave. They're on different streets. They're in different neighborhoods. So that vehicle will be out and about in a lot of different ways, a lot of different times, in a lot of different neighborhoods. And so, you know, can I tell you that a policeman lives directly on a block that's one of our first blocks in the city? I can't tell you that for sure, but I do know from being a policeman myself and having a take-home vehicle at the time that, you know, those cars will be used in a way and will be moving through the city that the visibility, the proximity to crime, the proximity to calls for service, maybe emergencies, will certainly be better, and it will certainly increase our opportunity when it comes to those types of situations. And I think you'll build those relationships in the neighborhood. And I think people not just directly around you will know that policemen live there and that they're close, and those relationships will expand and being part of neighborhood groups. So I think this is a good program for us. I really do. I think it's going to make a difference. We also hope that it continues to grow, that new police officers that are trying to decide, do I live in the city limits? Do I, you know, move out into the county somewhere? Or in fact, they can actually, by state law, live in an adjoining county that touches Tippecanoe County. They're entitled to be able to do that. That having that take-home vehicle will make them stay in the city limits, get their first home, starter home, maybe in one of those neighborhoods, and it will increase that number over time. And so I'm confident that it'll make things better. You know, it has to unwind itself just a little bit, but I think we're definitely headed in the right direction with it.
You talked to me a little bit last week at that announcement about where you're hoping to target some of these resources, and you mentioned a few minutes ago targeting the Claystone at the Crossing complex there, which is a big red dot on the heat map of crime, and that's one place that certainly could use some additional watch. But the other thing that became clear as I was looking at all of these heat maps, and there are four different ones released based on the different crimes: burglary, aggravated assault, rape, and a couple others. But it seems like a lot of the crime, a majority of the crime, happens north of Columbia Street, north of what was 26, and that's a big red blotch. So are you going to be spending more time sending officers and their take-home vehicles there, where a good portion of these crimes are happening?
Well, we already do that with our analytics. As you know, we have a criminal analysis gentleman on our staff, and we have those maps. And so we always allocate resources, manpower, directed patrols, street crimes unit, drug task force personnel based on those maps and those crime statistics. The command staff meets every month and does what's called ComStat, where they go through district by district, neighborhood by neighborhood, sometimes street by street, where that activity is happening. They look at different types of reports. Steve Hawthorne provides data for them, and we allocate manpower, resources, like I said, directed patrol in those areas already. So we have always done that for several years, used that that information to direct patrol and how we allocate, you know, what we do. And so we'll continue to do that because that's just smart police work. But then, you know, you do have places like Claystone that generate in a very small geographic area a lot of police calls. They demand a lot of resources. They take a lot of our time. And so to get a new owner there and do some of the multi-million-dollar renovations that they're going to do and also have such a spirit of cooperation in working with the police department and actually letting us help them design some of the security features and the lightings and the lighting that we'll be using, some of those things is going to make a big difference, and then an ongoing cooperation. So in the whole time that I've been here, I think this is the best opportunity that we have to turn Claystone around, which we know does spill out into other neighborhoods, or they have connections all over town with people in the community.
So let me ask you a philosophical question here, because you mentioned to me when I spoke to you a week ago that there was Claystone and there were a couple other neighborhoods on the southeast side of town that you said, hey, I'd hope to clean up, you know, Cambridge and Briarwood and Claystone. And then you look at these maps and the city core has the majority of the crime. Is it that you find it easier to clean up the couple outlying neighborhoods first before working on what must be a larger problem with the city core crime?
Well, no. I mean, we work on the city core crime, but you also have to look at the type of crime, the people that are connected with each other. Is that their home base, but they're committing crime out in other parts of the city? You know, we know where people live, where people are doing different things, what their network is, how we're trying to infiltrate that through the street crimes unit or the drug task force. And so you have to look, you know, police work is a mixture of science and going by your gut and knowing what you need to do and how you need to do it to try to clear up some of these problems. And so, you know, those maps are helpful and we derive data for them, but, you know, these are human beings. These are people doing things. Not everything is predictable. And some of that's your gut instincts. It's getting to know people. It's what your contacts are telling you. It's what your informants are telling you, how people are moving different things, what meeting locations are. And so you allocate those resources, not just based on those maps, but internal intelligence and other things that that we do in police work to try to solve crime.
We've got just a few minutes left with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today on Ask the Mayor. Send your questions to ask@wbaa.org. Tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter or call 496-1999. While we're on the subject of the North End a little bit, you talked about the investment that's going in up there at the Hartford Hub with the Faith Community Church. And it occurred to me that this is similar to what's going on with the State Street Project in West Lafayette. And I tell people in this program all the time, nothing happens in a vacuum. And here's, I think, a reasonable analog between your two cities, because these public-private partnerships seem to me, anyway, sort of like the wave of the future if a city wants to get something big done and get it done quickly. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, for several years now, you know, government really has taken that pathway. Well, at least governments, I think, that are successful, that you really have to build those partnerships. I mean, what the resources government has is limited, and there's been changes in funding that we've had to deal with and property tax caps. And so finding those partnerships that allow you to get some of these projects done so you can use your resources more effectively and spread them out a little bit further to create that overall quality of life that we're trying to create in the community and work with multiple partners really has become absolutely critical, whether it's, you know, the Renaissance Place that we did years ago for downtown Lafayette, or working with the Dalen Group on the Mark that's going in downtown now, and then working on the Riverfront Promenade and tying those two projects together. All of those things, without those public-private partnerships, they really wouldn't happen. And that really is the where everybody needs to go. It's the only way to be successful. And, you know, we're happy here in our community, Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, that we've been successful within the governments, but we're also within the private sector of building those relationships. I mean, we don't do everything together that we do, but, you know, we've been able to build those public-private partnerships with other people out in the community from different states, even, right, really from around the world, to get things done here in our community. And that's one of the reasons we've been successful.
You mentioned the new app as well. And it's interesting that people can kind of be standing wherever they think the problem is. They can use the app right then and there, and the app figures out, all right, this is where the pothole is, or this is where the crime problem is. Have you already seen people beginning to give you that data, and you've been able to redirect your crews to go solve problems?
Well, it's probably a little bit early for that, Stan. I haven't personally seen that yet. We just kind of unveiled it earlier in this week, but we have had a lot of interest. We know people are downloading it. We've had a lot of calls from people saying they've downloaded the app and that they've looked at it, and it is starting to generate that excitement. But it's probably a little bit early for us to analyze that at this time and determine that. But we certainly are going to. You know, I want to thank Kara Bishop and Rob Blue. They worked to create that app, and Kara is our director of communications and marketing. And what we're doing with Facebook and Twitter and Nextdoor, we really want people to follow that and to give us feedback and to interact with us. We want our engagement to continue to increase, because then we can make those decisions and get the information like that you're talking about, to really do that in a way that's best for our citizens. And that's what this is all about. It's citizens-driven. How do we make things easier, more informative, and how do we get feedback from them so we can do a better job serving the citizens of Lafayette?
The cynic in me has to ask you, suppose my next-door neighbor hasn't shoveled his walk after a big snowstorm. Can I point out to you, hey, look, I'm living next to a scofflaw, and you'll start coming and giving tickets to the people who are...
You can certainly send that through the Action Center, and it'll geolocate you with your app, and you can take a picture, and we'll follow up for you.
So, I mean, what I'm asking is, we've talked on this program before about it takes a little bit for the city to go and give some of those tickets. That mm-hmm. You'll send a warning first before you'll levy a fine. But I'm wondering, is this going to, do you think, cause you to give more of the to cite more of these infractions?
You know, I don't know if we'll do more infractions. It's possible. What it will do, I hope, help us, is someone like yourself that would send that to us. Obviously, we're going to respond to an Action Center report first. And so if we have people where they're having chronic problems and they're helping bring those to our attention, it will help us address those and clear them up quicker. I mean, I hope the warning works, but if it doesn't, then we certainly, you know, we do issue tickets. But I think it will help us in our efficiency clearing up some of the worst spots, whether it's snow removal or other ordinance violations or crime activity that might be happening, or abandoned houses, with that neighborhood engagement, their ability to do it easy, do it right when they see it, when they're thinking about it, so they don't forget, they've got to go home. I really do think it will make us more efficient and help us get some of those things cleaned up quickly.
I also noticed there's a section there called transparency, and which of course has been a big buzzword here in West Lafayette for the last couple of weeks. What are you guys hoping to put in that section?
Well, you know, we're in a big conversion right now to Tyler Munis, our overall enterprise software system throughout the whole city. And as we finish that up, you know, we want as many things online as possible. We want people to be able to look at records and minutes and audio and all the different types of information that they want. So we're in the process of, we still haven't finished that big switch over yet. But as we do that, we're going to try to make more and more available to the community so it's easy for them to see. We're doing a lot more video than we used to also, even like the police press conference that we have up on the city's YouTube page. You know, we're trying to do everything we can to be transparent, to get that out there in formats. We even used Periscope a couple times now to get that out there in formats to make it as easy for people to see what we're doing as possible. We want them to know. We want them to help. We want them to get excited and get engaged to be part of the solution.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, unfortunately, we've run out of time for today, but thanks as always for coming in, and we look forward to doing it again next month.
Thanks, Stan.
Remember that all of these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org, and you can send questions for any of our four mayors at any time to ask@WBAA.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert. Civil Engineering Solutions for Better Communities. BFSENGR.com.